Amory and 107.5 FM W298 DK Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. As President Biden said, he expects Iran to retaliate against Israel sooner rather than later. ABC's Britt Clenett is in Tel Aviv with more on the tensions.
Israel on high alert as more than 40 rockets from Iran-backed militant group Hezbollah light the night sky. The Iron Dome intercepting many of those missiles over northern Israel. This is new video seen by the Associated Press reportedly shows Iranian commandos raiding a ship, which Israeli Army radio says is likely Israeli-owned, near the Strait of Hormuz.
Any Iranian retaliation would be for Israel's attack on Iran's consulate in Syria that killed military leaders. Six people were killed in an attack in a shopping center in suburban Sydney, Australia. The attacker was shot and killed by police. Authorities say they do not believe there's a link to terrorism. And former President Trump's criminal hush money trial in New York is set to begin on Monday. This is ABC News. The former interpreter for Major League Baseball superstar Shohei Ohtani made his first appearance in court in Los Angeles Friday, accused of stealing $16 million from Ohtani to cover gambling debts.
Ippei Mitsuhara is a free man again on $25,000 bail in court. The judge allowed Mitsuhara to post bail ahead of an arraignment next month, but under terms of his bail, he cannot travel outside of Southern California, had to surrender his passport, and he has to get gambling addiction help. Plus, he's not allowed to do any gambling or talk to any bookmakers. Mitsuhara is charged with a single count of bank fraud and could get up to 30 years in federal prison if convicted. Alex Stone, ABC News, Los Angeles.
A Maine police officer accused of lying about a missing person has now been charged with several crimes, including falsifying a report in which he claimed he took the missing man, Eric Foote, to a hospital. Washburn Police Sergeant Chandler Cole has resigned following the charges. I'm Brian Clark, ABC News.
Nightline with Pete Schwabba.
I'm really excited right now because I've wanted to have this guy on for a while. He is a legendary stand-up comedian. You know him as Tom Dreesen. Tom, welcome to Nightline.
Pete, it's nice to talk to you. Let me tell you how I became a legend. All my critics are dead.
Did you have anything to do with that? Don't say anything, Tom.
No, I refuse to answer on the grounds of might incriminate me. I'll plead the fifth on that.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, weeknights 7 till 9 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Busted pencils.
We'll keep talking about it because it is an important thing happening in our world and in our culture, whether you're in education or in any field. It's part of your day-to-day right now. Like, hey, what's the role AI is going to play in this?
We give every assignment the kids turn in, we put it through AI detectors. There's no ability for a student to opt out of the surveillance.
Busted pencils, weeknights at 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Wisconsin is having a green energy construction boom. As Mike Moan reports, that's good news for Wisconsin's unionized construction workers.
Four major utilities operating in Wisconsin recently announced a pledge to hire union workers for clean energy development tied to federal incentives under the Inflation Reduction Act. Kent Miller of the Wisconsin Laborers District Council says it paves the way for a smoother transition to more wind, solar, and similar projects.
With the commitment from the utilities to make sure that the wages and benefits are the same standard as legacy energy, it allows workers to focus on updating their skill sets to meet the needs of the project and not worry about are there concessions in wages and benefits.
In earlier phases of renewable energy construction, Miller says some project leaders focused on bringing in out-of-state non-union contractors. Now that Wisconsin labor organizations have a seat at the table, Miller says the next challenge is getting more advance notice before a project breaks ground so they can ramp up recruiting well ahead of time. For example, Miller says a utility-scale solar development requires a lot of labor, and they want as many people as possible to know about potential openings. He says that includes apprenticeships.
Somebody could start their apprenticeship career, complete their apprenticeship, and become a journey worker through the duration of a utility-scale solar project.
He points to the Paris Solar Farm project in Kenosha County, which at its peak had nearly 150 laborers. Of the apprentices, 70% were women or people of color. Analysts say the hiring pledge and associated projects could lead to nearly 19,000 construction jobs that come with prevailing wages. This is Mike Bowen for Wisconsin News Connection.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bowen.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Sunny, warm, and breezy today, a high in the mid-70s. Mostly clear tonight, low mid-40s. And more sunshine for Sunday, high low 70s. On Monday, sun continues and breezy again, back to the mid-70s. Showers and storms likely Tuesday. Right now it's 50.
Connecting with you on air, online, and on the Civic Media app. This is Lake Air 1260 AM, WLAK, Amory's radio station.
This is our broadcast on Civic Media throughout the state of Wisconsin and beyond. My name is Jim Santel, your host this hour and every weekend, discussing issues in law and government, the administration of justice in America. This weekend, talking about this major event happening in American history beginning on Monday morning. That is the first time a former president of the United States of America has been placed on trial, this one in a state criminal court in Manhattan, in New York City. And we are talking a lot about the pretrial process by which this case has gotten here, the basic focus of it, the substance of the charges, and discussing what Judge Juan Merchan, who is the presiding judge or justice, as the judges are called in that venue, what he's going to be doing with respect to the selection of a jury, the questions he's going to be asking them to determine whether or not they can be fair and impartial, the things he's going to say to them about what this case is about, and the specific admonition that they are not to bring into the courtroom, at least their deliberation on the courtroom, anything other than their open ears and eyes, their capacity to do critical thinking to determine whether or not the government, as it always is obliged to do, has presented evidence beyond a reasonable doubt in support of the 34 counts or some of them that would justify a verdict of guilty in this matter. Again, Donald Trump presumed innocent until such time as the jury does just that. Who's going to be testifying in the course of the trial? Well, plainly, we've talked a lot about Michael Cohen. We've talked a lot about Stormy Daniels. There's another fellow named David Pecker, who is the former publisher of the National Enquirer. He's also involved in this with respect to the catch and kill aspect of this case. It's entirely possible that other members of the former Trump administration will also be called in to testify. Hope Hicks, a former campaign and White House aide to Donald Trump. Others who, according to the district attorney, also have information that is relevant to this particular transaction or set of transactions that are the focus of the financial charges in this case. About five or six other people also on that list, names we may have heard of from the Trump administration. No obligation to call everyone on a witness list, but again, an obligation by the prosecution to present evidence. It is the burden of the government to prove the case beyond a reasonable doubt. Defense, Donald Trump has no obligation whatsoever to present any evidence, including testimony of his own. Even so, Donald Trump, in anticipation of this and in reaction to the judge's serial denials of his request for a delay, a number of delays sought by the defense in recent days, he said on Friday that he did, in fact, plan to testify at this trial. He did call the case and things related to the case administered by Judge Merchan. He called it a scam. He said, all I can do is tell the truth. And the truth is they have no case. Now, again, the defendant does not have to make that particular decision until the judge looks at the defense and says you may present your case. And even during the course of that presentation, it is up to the defendant whether or not to take the stand. And we will see whether Donald Trump is true to his word about taking the stand. No presumption against him if he does not take the stand. And indeed, prosecutors cannot argue. It is a matter, it would be a mistrial if they were to suggest to the jury that the failure of the defendant to testify should be taken into account by them. The defendant always has his Fifth Amendment right not to testify. That attends to Donald Trump at all times. And about this process called jury selection, Donald Trump said that the process is largely luck. He said it depends on who you get. Well, not entirely. The judge is doing his very best in this very human enterprise to try to determine exactly who those jurors would be. And continuing our discussion about the kinds of things that the jurors are going to be asked on Monday and Tuesday and throughout the week and probably into the following week as well, as this entire veneer, the entire group of jurors is called in and asked some 42 different questions about who they are, their background, along the way, focusing specifically upon Donald Trump and the allegations in this case. The judge is going to ask them some things that I do find interesting. He's going to ask them, have you ever considered yourself a supporter of or belong to any of the following? The QAnon movement, Proud Boys, the Oath Keepers, the Three Percenters, the Boogaloo Boys, or Antifa? All those groups in various ways we've talked a lot about on this broadcast, in previous broadcasts. Some of them, the subjects, obviously, of criminal prosecutions and convictions and sentences for things related to the January 6th matter in 2021. This case, of course, harkens back to the days right before and after the 2016 election and into 2017, related again to the alleged violation of the financial laws in the state of New York. Interesting that the justice, is going to be asking about affiliations or support to any of these groups. Interesting as well, question 31, do you have any strong opinions or firmly held beliefs about whether a former president may be criminally charged in state court? Sort of asking almost a legal question of the jurors and whether they have any strong opinions about that sort of jurisdictional, that power, that capacity argument. Do you have any feelings or opinions about how Donald Trump is being treated in this case? Obviously, the judge responding in some ways to the things that are out there in the media. Donald Trump maintaining, as he did as late as this past week, that he is being treated unfairly, not only in the decision not to grant these delays, but in other matters related to pretrial dispositions. And once again, the judge asking repeatedly during the course of these 42 questions, can you assure us that you will decide this case solely on the evidence you see and hear in the courtroom and the law as I give it to you? Significantly, do you have any strong opinions or firmly held beliefs about Donald Trump or the fact that he's a current candidate for president that would interfere with your ability to be fair and impartial? He's going to ask if you read or listened to any of the books written by Michael Cohen. He's also going to ask about any books that the members of the jury pool have read that the defendant himself has written, Donald Trump has written. If so, which ones are those? And significantly, do you have any opinions about the legal limits governing political contributions, an issue not really related specifically to this case, but unless the judge determined that somehow that is important to know. Again, not asking what those opinions are necessarily. That might be a follow-up, but do you have any opinions about that? And once again, can you promise to set aside anything you have heard or read about in this case and render your verdict solely on the evidence presented in this courtroom and the law as given to you by me, by the judge? Can you do that? Can you separate out any biases, any sorts of prejudices and preconceptions that you have, and make your determination based exclusively on what you see, what you hear, what you consume in this trial? Can you assure me, the judge will be saying, that you will follow my instructions and on the definition of reasonable doubt and the presumption of innocence, once again, that attends this defendant? The Constitution, he will tell the members of the jury, provides the defendant has no burden to introduce any evidence or testify in any criminal case. Do you understand that? And will you not impute anything to the defendant if the defendant chooses not to go down that road? In the end, number 42, is there any reason, would it be bias or anything else, that would prevent you from being fair and impartial if you are selected as a jury for this case? Lots and lots of things for jurors among a group, probably about 500 people coming in groups of maybe 50, maybe 100, maybe something more, something less. Ask those questions to determine whether or not they should be impaneled. The process itself, the judge himself will probably strike for what's called cause. Those jurors who indicate either initially or during the course of this colloquy, this conversation back and forth, will determine whether or not some of them should be stricken because they simply cannot do this job. And then after he has determined that something less than that total group of 500 or several hundred or whatever it may be, then the parties themselves have the capacity, through a process that he will also describe, to strike witnesses, to strike jurors from this process, from the lists that are then presented to them, based upon things that they have heard during the course of this voir dire. That process, again, going to take a number of days, maybe even into early the following week, before the judge can have them all stand, raise their right hands, and promise, commit, swear to hear the evidence in this case and to invest in it all of their good judgment, all of their good assessment, the critical skills, thinking that they need to apply to all of this, and render a true and just verdict based upon their impartial views about this. Now, this goes to a larger question that I suspect is out there a lot, that many of us are pondering.